Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. Today my guest is Pat Bradley. He serves as founder and CEO of Crisis Aid International. In September 2000, Pat witnessed the results of the genocide in South Sudan firsthand and knew at that moment doing nothing was not an option. His helplessness turned into action as he returned to the United States to raise money for starving people in no-go zones where starvation, disease, and danger are a part of everyday life. In 2002, Crisis Aid was officially incorporated, and once Pat took that first step to do something, others quickly joined in, enabling Crisis Aid to deliver a wide variety of resources over the years. He has also written a new book that we talk about, Born for Rescue. And we talk about just, I know that he is the CEO of this incredible organization that provides so much care for others, but we talk about the simple steps of really joining in God's plan for us to serve others and what that looks like. Just simple little steps, keeping our eyes open to things, and it will just inspire you that your life is purpose is to love others like Jesus loves others. So you're going to love him. Enjoy Pat Bradley. Hi, Pat. Thanks so much for being on our show today. We're so excited to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me, Christy. It's an honor to be with you today.
It's so fun. We talked kind of offline of how we are both, well, you're in St. Louis, mm-hmm. and have been born and, you know, they're been there for a while. And then we used to live in St. Louis and we're actually flying there today. So that was a fun kind of connection.
Yeah, it is. Small world, isn't it?
It is a small world. It is a small world. So I wanted to speak with you. One of the things that we talk about on our podcast is really helping others see the needs of others, the needs of the world, and why it's so important to have our families be a part of that. And, you know, the thing that people have heard me say a million times is if we don't show, we can't expect our kids to have a heart, a compassionate, empathetic heart for the needs of others if we never show them the needs of mm-hmm. others. And over my life, when I've seen different things that I just can't seem to get out of my mind or it just doesn't feel right and I know we need to do something. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of been your story too. So you write about it in your new book, which is Born for Rescue, which I'm so excited for that to come out. And so tell me a little bit about Born for Rescue, why you wrote that, and what was that maybe moment for you that kind of changed the trajectory of doing something for others?
Well, to answer first the question of why the book is, well, Crisis Aid now is, it's the organization we founded 20 years ago, and we've worked in 11 different countries, and we've got multiple kinds of projects from human trafficking to feeding, and so literally this is the true story of what happened. I brought over a group of people to show them the work that we're doing. It was we call them a vision trip and immerse them into the people's lives that we serve in that, and you know, as the week goes on, you know, we talk about stories that I've experienced doing in different Sudan and Afghanistan, other countries. And one of them was the CEO of a publishing company. And long story short, he convinced me that we need to write a book and that we could probably raise a lot of money with it. But for me, Christy, the real reason is, one, I want to glorify God. I want people to know what God has been doing in our work, in our ministry. And I want it to be something that encourages people to really like ask themselves, what can I do? What should I do? Just literally get them out of the church pew and say, yes, God, whatever you want, I just say yes. Because really, at the end of the day, that's all God is waiting for, is he's waiting for us to say yes. I want it to encourage people, inspire people to grasp that God has a much bigger plan for their life than they realize. And that the only thing limiting God is themselves. because all he just needs is us. And then the third reason we wrote this book is just to spread the word about crisis aid. And, you know, I come from the business world, so I want hope it raises a lot of money, because 100% of everything we make on this book will go back into crisis aid.
That's awesome. Tell me a little bit, if people don't know what crisis aid is, what do you guys do, and how did that start?
Okay, crisis aid, we're a Christian, you know, Christian missions organization. We do humanitarian projects. So it started in 2000, the year 2000. I made a trip to South Sudan. I was on a board of a ministry that dealt with Christian persecution. And we spent 2 weeks on the ground in the war zone, and we saw things that were just beyond description, stories that were just gut-wrenching stories, mothers talking about their babies being slammed against trees, and just everything we saw. And so I came back from that trip, and it took me, Christy, literally 2 weeks to process everything. And my employees thought I lost my mind. My wife knew what was happening. I didn't understand. My kids thought I was crazy, because literally I didn't talk to anybody.
Did it just wreck you in a way that you, when you went over, let me go back a little bit. When you went over there, what was your reason to go over there? Were you in that humanitarian, you know, sphere, or were you just going over to kind of, to see, like, tell me what you were expecting when you went over there?
Well, we were getting reports. So I was on this board, International Christian Concern, a great organization that helps persecuted Christians globally. And so we were getting these reports of what was happening in South Sudan, and just on a whim, literally on a whim, decided, hey, let's go and see for ourselves. So we did a little research, found a contact, and we went to see what we could see, to see if it was really true, the things that were coming out. And what we found was the horror stories that were coming out were nothing compared to what was happening inside the country. And so that was the genesis of moving in from an informational type of ministry that I was involved in to actually meeting the felt needs of people.
How did that, so I laugh that you say on a whim we went to Sudan. Just on a whim we went to Sudan. But yeah, tell me a little bit more about that experience when you went there, and some of the things maybe that you saw, that you felt. You said after you came back, it was like you couldn't even really process. I remember coming back from a refugee camp in Beirut, and it took me, I have pictures of me laying on the couch with my daughter, and I was jet lagged as well, but it was like, I couldn't even, it was like my heart and my head couldn't process. So tell me a little bit about when you went over there, was it more than you expected? Was it worse than you expected? And then when you came back, how did your body and your heart kind of process all that?
Well, on the, you know, before the trip going there, I had really no idea what to expect. Now, I've been in other countries before, working with persecuted Christians, underground churches and stuff, but never going into A, an African country, and B, into an active war zone. So I really went with no expectations. I just, like, Lord, show us what you want us to see, and just went with an open heart and open mind. But when I came back, so what happened was, on the last day in the country, we came across these people. There was a group of about 70 men, women, and children. And it was 120, 125 degrees during the daytime. We were right in the desert area. And there was they were standing underneath these trees, trying to stay in the shade. It was, I mean, very small area. And these were the survivors. Their village was attacked the night before by the government of Sudan. These were the survivors, and mainly old people and children. They had nothing. There were people there on that group that didn't even have clothing. They had no water, no food, no. They were hundreds of miles from anything. And we had nothing. It was our last day in the country. And as we prayed with them and met with them and just tried to encourage them, like, you know, what do you say to people like that? What do you do? As we left, I got in the vehicle, and I remember looking back over my shoulder, and I heard a distinct voice say to me, doing nothing is no longer an option. And then he said, I'm going to change the course of your ministry. And I knew precisely then what that meant. So that meant to help meet the needs of people. And so we started, that was in February of 2000. The next time I went was in September of 2000. Came back, told the story, raised a little bit of money, put some money from savings in, and our first relief trip was we gave 2-pound bag of rice to 4,000 people. And that was the start of it all.
Wow. So kind of as you came back and you were kind of processing that, I think since you've been back on many trips, help us kind of understand for those who have maybe never been on a trip like that. And one of the things that I say is that we don't have to go to, you know, not everyone can go to Sudan or to these different places. I do think learning about those things, even if it's reading or being involved with an organization that, you know, does those trips and they can come back and report, stories change you. But talk to me about people who, you know, are sitting here and going, do I have to go on a trip like that to have God work in me or change my heart? You know, the thing I keep hearing you saying is that I just had an open heart and basically just said, God, wherever you want me. How do we do that kind of in our lives right now if people aren't able to you know, make those big trips like that?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, we've all had the thought of how can God use me? How can I be used by God? And we ask that question, I think, so many. I know in my life I did. And asking that question so many times, I realized looking back, it held me up for a number of years because I was so stuck in this thing. I got to hear the will of God. What's God's will for my life? I haven't heard the will for God. Well, the answer one day dawned on me. It's like there's 3,000 verses in the Bible that deal with poverty and injustice. Choose one, build your life around that, and you're in the middle of God's will for you. So really it comes down to what am I willing to do? Am I really willing to step out and say, yes, Lord, to whatever? Now, what most people don't really understand is this, is that there's a thing inside him right now because God made us. He wired us. He knew what he wanted us to do before we were ever born. It's already on our inside. We're just looking at it from our perspective of what I can do for God. And God's saying, no, that's the wrong question. The question is, what am I going to do for you and through you? Look at it that way, then you start seeing things differently and you start seeing possibilities and you see things that maybe I could do this or maybe I could do that, when before you were thinking, God, what's your will? I need to hear God's will.
I think the question we all have, and you kind of talk about this in your book, is like, what's my purpose? And I think, you know, we have that I remember having that question maybe after college, you know, what's my purpose? And then I think you have other seasons. So for those who are listening who maybe have stayed home with their kids and then their kids are at school and then now they're like in a new, you know, what am I supposed to do now? Like, I've been home with my kids and now I want to do something. Or maybe someone feels stuck in a season and they're like, I know my gifts and passions can do more, but I feel like I'm in this space right now. So when you hear that question, like, what is our purpose? How would you answer that?
I say this. Jesus says in Matthew, he said, whatever you do for the least of these, you do for me. So now I look at that and it's like, okay, my Lord, my Savior just said to me, whatever you want to do for people to help people, whatever it is, you're doing it for me. So go be blessed. I'll be with you. Go do. I think it's, again, I just try to stress the true simplicity in all of this. And really, I mean, our purpose is, if we got a family, my purpose was to be a good husband, be a good employer to my employees, my children, my wife, all of that, you know, that's a given. You know, we know we need to do those things. But the real purpose that's really deep inside our heart is that thing that's yearning that God's already put there, and he keeps stoking it, keeps stoking it, but he requires us to look inside our hearts to see exactly what is that thing. And if we don't know, step out and do something, you know, like say a mom, like my wife, for instance, when our youngest started school, she got involved in a food pantry, you know, a couple hours a week. But it started with that and it helped her. It gave her fulfillment. And as time went on, you know, it started to grow and grow. And you know, it's how people find things. But what we look for is the big steps. And when we're looking for the big steps on how to serve God, we miss all the little ones that get to the big one.
That's good. Okay, so I love that. So tell me more about that. So I love what I'm hearing you saying is like find a need, any need. It doesn't have to be this big thing. And I think sometimes when I interview people like you who, you know, founded this crisis aid and now it's impacting these thousands of people. I think sometimes when people listen, they think, oh, well, that's awesome that he can do that. That's his life. That's mm-hmm. his, you know, that's his job. But I am a mom of four kids and I can't go start a nonprofit, you know? So I always temper that with, you know, those things are so inspiring, but then taking a step back and saying, okay, not everyone has to go do that. So tell me a little bit of your journey from the little steps to the big steps. So you came back from your trip from Sudan, you were totally wrecked. Then you went, you raised a little money, you went back and you just had this really not that much rice, you know, these people. It was just little. So, and I think that stops us sometimes too. We think if we don't have a big answer, or if we don't have the exact answer for things, or if it's not perfect, we don't do it. So tell me a little bit about that, the small steps that led to the big.
Well, the small steps really started way before Sudan. So like God, when I got saved, I read this book called God Smuggler, and it's about Brother Andrew and the persecuted church. And Christy, I will say this, if it wasn't for that book, I would not have, Crisis Aid would not be in existence today. It so radically touched me. And in the book, Barn for Rescue, I go in, you know, we tell that story of how all of that happened. And one of the things I want people to understand is that I'm really no special. I'm not more gifted than anyone else that's sitting there watching this podcast, listening. I don't have any special talents that, you know, that made this happen. It's just I had a willingness. And what I like to say is that the difference between me and them is I got out of the pew. And too many other people just stay in the pew. We think that.
In the comfortable.
Yeah. And, you know, and people are saying like, oh, you know, I want to wait for God. This is another one. I'm waiting for God to give me a green light. But what I think what people don't realize is we've already got the green light.
Yeah, right.
He is waiting for you to do that. But anyway, the small steps started way back after I got saved. I just started serving in my church, doing little things, you know, small things, whatever needed to be done. I got involved with the missions committee or, and, you know, it was just tiny things, insignificant things in my mind that took an hour this week, took an hour next week. When I look back on it, those were the building blocks that got me to where I'm at today. So it started out just serving in my local church. But what was funny, Christy, is I found fulfillment in that. And serving, just, you know, not doing anything major, always behind the scenes. Nobody knew who I was. But I found true fulfillment in that.
And that probably opened your heart just a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more, you know, to say, oh, this is bigger than me. This is something that I can do to help others. There's nothing like helping another person or serving or loving someone and building that relationship with them. There's nothing like it. So that started to open your heart. So that probably when you went, I'm just putting words in your mouth. When you went to Sudan, it wasn't, you know, you have been building that up with small things. I love that the small things. And I also love that you said a book changed your life. You know, I want people to hear that. Like, it wasn't just the Sudan trip that changed your life. It was a book. So everyone can read a book, right? Everyone can read a story of someone else who's been through the atrocities. So take me back to after you went back to Africa and had the rice. And how did that go?
So I came back home, told people what we did. And that led to another trip and led to another trip. And then funny thing happened. We were in the middle of Sudan on one of our trips. And in the middle of the night, I remember sitting in a tent and sitting up going, God just told me to go to Afghanistan. And that sounds insane. And so we were like in the desert and it was super hot. And I thought to myself, am I having a heat stroke? What's going on here? I laid down and went back to sleep. And so the next morning, I asked my friend, did you hear that? He said, no. So I just kind of pushed it out of my brain. Over the next 6 months, that thought just kept coming back to me. But in my great spiritual acuity and sensitive ears, I had no idea what it meant. I didn't know. I thought it was me. I didn't just, you know, where's Afghanistan? I had to look on a map. And then on the morning of 9/11, I was in my family room with my wife and we were watching the events unfold. And when the first tower was halfway down from collapsing, I looked over at her and I said, now I know why God said to go to Afghanistan. And I remember, she gave me a weird look, but I remember thinking, where did that come from? And so 8 weeks later, there I was on the border of Afghanistan, there to serve hurting people. And that's that's where, you know, and that was our calling to do those kinds of things. And I knew that, but again, it goes back to the small steps. And that's where actually Crisis Aid was actually birthed, on the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan. That's where we got the idea of starting at a different type of an organization. So
I love it. I love that. It's just, I think the first thing that people need to hear is the willingness to just listen and to actually do what God tells you to do. So that listening piece, the listening piece is the hardest piece for me, because I'm always doing the things, and God had to really pull me back 10 years ago and say, thank you so much for what you do for me, but I actually don't even need you. It's a gift that you get to do this, but I just want you to be with me, and I just want you to live, you know, with me, and I don't even need you to do all these things. This is just the gift. And so now the work that I do now with human trafficking, I see it as a true coming alongside, and there's no pressure. I don't feel the pressure to save or rescue or do all these things, but I just get to come alongside God. And I think that's when our lives really change, is when first we listen, and then God starts putting these little things in our head, or, you know, we just see things. Like, even my kids will see things that don't feel right to them, you know, whether it be the homeless when they were young, and like, this doesn't make sense to me why this person is outside. Or, you know, we see something. I always tell my kids every morning, eyes wide, light shine. And I have to remind myself, eyes wide. The other day we drove by some people who were homeless, and they were washing their clothes in the fountain. And I saw them like trying to scrub. And I was driving with my daughter, and we needed to get home. We were packing the next day for a trip. And I have a friend who used, the only thing she used to do before she started this nonprofit for homeless people, she used to just go and wash their clothes. Oh, she would go downtown, and she would see the homeless and see their bags and see their dirty clothes that they're wearing all the time. And she would literally pick up their clothes on a Friday in big trash bags. She would take them to her house and wash loads and loads of laundry and then bring them back. That's all she did.
Wow.
That's it. So, of course, as I'm driving by, I have her little, you know, in my head, and I'm like, oh, I was like, I don't have time. And I turn the car around, and my daughter's 10, and she's like, Mom, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I was like, I just feel prompted. I don't have the time to do it. It's not comfortable for me. But we're going to go back, and we're going to ask these people if we can wash their clothes real quick. And she's like, really? I'm like, really? So, and we've done some, you know, I haven't done it in a while, honestly, because I haven't been listening. And so, we turned around, and she's like, can I just stay in the car for a second? I said, absolutely. So, she watched me, and I just asked them, can I wash your clothes for you? And, they said, sure. And they had, you know, wet socks. I mean, there's nothing worse than wet socks, right? Like wet socks that you have to like walk in. It's the worst. So I was like, well, let me wash. And they didn't have a ton of stuff. And so we just brought it back and washed it, and then went back up and, you know, gave it to him. No big deal. But to me, it was those little things that, you know, I thank goodness I actually turned around. I almost didn't, but I think because I had my kid in the car, I did. Because I didn't want, because when we saw it together, she knew I saw it, right? She knew I saw something that wasn't right, and shouldn't be. And so if I hadn't have turned around, you know, she might have been like, well, that's not our problem. And it wasn't our, I mean, in all honesty, it wasn't my problem. But if I'm looking through the scriptures through Jesus' eyes, it is. And so anyway, little bitty thing, so minute, but just, you know, keeping our eyes open to those bitty things.
Yeah. But you know what though? I mean, that was not a little thing, Christy. What you did, your daughter will remember that till the day she dies. If she lives to be 100, she will never forget what you did. But the other thing is this, is that we look at it from our scale and our perspective. So to you, that was little, but remember what Jesus said. Hey, you just washed my clothes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. He did it for me.
Yeah. You're right. So talk to me, you know, we work kind of in the same industry, and we see a lot of hurt and we see a lot of pain, and that can be overwhelming. And I think even for people who are thinking, if they read the paper and they see all the tragedy, you know, how do you stay hopeful after witnessing so much disaster and injustice, you know, on the daily?
you know, you go through seasons where it gets tough at times. And, you know, for instance, we've got a big feeding program in East Africa for severely malnourished children. And when you see a child die because they flat out just didn't have enough food, you know, you think, if I was a day earlier, what more could I have done? But the grace of God carries us through those times. I mean, we have those human emotions and stuff, but I also know that God can help us if we just don't try to pray, but just try to be, you know, just like be with God and let, he knows how to take those things, those hurts and those crushings and just do something with them. I don't have to do anything with them. I just have to experience it and just trust God to deal with it and just be willing to do it when they come up. I would say the other thing for me personally, God has wired me that like, I'm always looking into the future. So it's like, okay, we got this going. We got this pediatric hospital built. It's operating. It's okay. So, you know, what's the next thing? And so I'm just kind of wired that way to, what's next? Let's do the next thing.
Yeah. That's my personality too. And I ask these questions selfishly just because I want to be in this role, you know, for the long haul of leading a team that is truly weekly, you know, providing advocacy, prevention, awareness for human trafficking and seeing horrible stories. But those stories, as hard as they are to hear, have shaped me. And so I just want you to kind of talk about maybe the power of story in your life, the stories maybe that you've heard that have changed you. And just I think an encouragement to our listeners is stories change us. When we are sitting with a refugee, when we are sitting with a single mom, when we are sitting, it becomes not just an issue, a political issue, a topic on a paper, but it becomes real. And so tell us a little bit about maybe how stories, personal stories, have impacted you and changed your perspective.
Well, let's talk about human trafficking. We've been involved in that since 2006. And the very first girl we ever rescued in this big red light district, we went down there this one, we heard a story about this red light district. Thousands and thousands of girls are trapped there and they can't get out. And so we decided to go down there one night with our friend who had a ministry with street kids. Again, it's the story's in the book. I'm just trying to hit the highlights, but we ended up walking out with one girl that night. And when we went down there, I went down there with the attitude of, let's just see what we see. You know, I think God is leading us, but I wasn't even sure God was speaking to me about going down there. But we met this girl, and through a conversation, we led her to the Lord. We baptized her there in the middle of this red light district. It was kind of crazy. The story's kind of crazy, unbelievable when you really think about what happened. But I asked her, I said, are you willing to come out? Will you leave tonight? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, is there a problem with that with your pimp? She said, no, he's not here tonight. I said, oh, well, go get your, you know, can you go get yourself and come? So she went, came back, and in about 10 minutes, she had a little, like a Walmart shopping bag. All her worldly possessions were in there. And as we were walking out, she started telling me her story. And her story was, I'm 16 years old. I've been here for 5 years. I have no family, no mother, no father. I don't know if I got relatives. I have been stuck here, and to me, there was never a way to get out. Now I'm walking out. And so as she told me this story about her life, it started to dawn on me, wait a minute, there's probably thousands of girls like that here. And so that one story led us into the whole field of human trafficking. And when we rescued her, Christy, the word sex trafficking was not used anywhere. No one ever heard of that phrase. So we were very, very early in that field. And her story, her short, brief life story created something and a movement that went global. And for us now, we've rescued more than 2,000 girls who are part of our program. And so just that one little story changed everything for hundreds and for thousands, probably tens of thousands of girls.
I think the first thing I hear is you went there without really a plan. You know, I think sometimes we think we have to have all these, the perfect steps to do something. And you really just went to go see it. You didn't really know what would happen. You were just I hear all these stories. What you keep saying is you're expecting God to move in some way, and you're literally just going. You don't really have, you know, a specific thing. And I think that hinders us sometimes, where we think we have to have this perfect plan, and you just went. And you just did it. And because of your obedience, or because you had this prompting just to go see, that one girl, you know, was rescued, that changed the life of her forever, but also changed your life, and then changed the mission, you know, of your organization. And, you know, thousands were rescued. And I think of Unbound Now, which I work for, and our founder, it's very similar. Like, you know, like, she just went to the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing, and, you know, and just kept on until, and she was like, God is faithful, and I just expect him to show up, and so I'm gonna keep going and keep doing it. And so I think, you know, I love the power of one. You didn't start with, oh, we rescued 50,000 girls, you know, on a sting operation. It was, I went, I showed up, I got to talk with one person, that one person sparked this. I think that's so inspiring for people to hear, that it's not the thousands. Sometimes it's just the one.
Christy, we were walking out of this red light district back to our car, and I remember thinking this thought, what in the world are we going to do with this girl? I had no clue. We had no plans, ministry plans of, we're going to start this great ministry and rescue. Like, where are we going to take her tonight? It's like 11:30 at night. What are we going to do with this girl?
Yeah. But you figured it out.
We did. And you know, so many times God is just wanting us to take that step. Take the step. And we always want to see what's the next 10 steps, or what, you know, like you said, some people think we have to have these great plans. And, you know, and I've had people say, well, I can see the first step, but I can't see what to do after that. And I'm going, well, you're not going to see what to do after that until you take the first one. Because maybe God's just not showing you everything. So
I love it. Well, I'm so excited for people to get your book, Born for Rescue, and just to learn more about what you do at Crisis Aid. I just want to thank you for just listening and showing up and hearing stories, and, you know, just being so, you know, it's just letting us know how simple it is to just listen to God and then just do the next thing. And I think some we fear that we're not good enough, or that we don't have the skills, or that it's going to be too uncomfortable. And I mean, I'm guessing you would say all those things don't compare to the joy that you probably get to live now.
I mean, when you help other people, you start to experience a love that you've never experienced before in any other way, because it's the only way that this love can come to you is by giving of yourself to other people that are not part of your family. And it's a dynamic, and I think it's how God blesses us for doing good, is that it expands our capacity to love others, but also to receive the love of other people.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. That give and take is what I love so much. Well, thank you so much, Pat, for being on and just inspiring us just to take that one step that could really change our life and others. I really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me. God bless you.
Our Beloved quick tip is to keep your eyes open, to do the next thing, to ask God, what is it that you want me to care about, and how can I help? You know, I loved when Pat talked about just the simple things, just being obedient. And sometimes he didn't even know the next step. He just knew he had to do something. So I encourage us to get his book, Born for Rescue. You can get that out. It came out this week. You can get it anywhere that you love to get books, and really start putting these practices into our life. Because I know, and Pat knows, that when we give our lives to something bigger than ourselves, it changes us forever.